This is the voice of contract management presented by the law firm of Kroll & Mooring, exclusively for NCMA. Stay up to date on all things contract management 5 minutes at a time. Our team at Kroll & Mooring presents these podcasts to keep you up to speed on a bi-monthly basis. We will cover everything from regulatory updates to crucial changes that affect government contracting.
We are your co-hosts for this edition, Peter Ayer and Yuan Zhou. During today's podcast, we're going to focus on the FY26 National Defense Authorization Act, which was signed into law on December 18th. The NDAA, which is well over 3,000 pages, makes significant changes to defense acquisition, sourcing restrictions, and interactions between the defense industrial base and the Pentagon. We have a comprehensive summary available on the Kroll website. So during the podcast, we're not trying to cover everything. We're really just going to highlight a relatively small number of notable provisions that are relevant for government contractors and places to focus on for both companies and for practitioners across the board. So Yuan, why don't you get us started?
Thanks so much, Peter, and Happy New Year to all of our listeners. Some of the most significant reforms in the FY26 NDAA relate to changes in acquisition processes for major systems and a reduction in certain burdens for non-traditional defense contractors, which in turn drive the department's other contracting processes. Now, Congress articulated the goals of the acquisition system as the optimal combination of cost, quality, technical capability or solution quality, and delivery schedule. To help deliver on these objectives, the NDAA created two key roles: the Portfolio Acquisition Executive role, which is responsible for leading capability portfolios that, among other things, prioritize commercial products and services, which is addressed in Section 1802. It also established the Product Support Manager role, which is responsible for lifecycle sustainment of covered systems, including IP management and authority over critical readiness items that could impact sustainment, see Section 1803. We also wanted to call out Section 1804, which raises the threshold for mandatory submissions of certified cost or pricing data, also known as the TINA threshold, from $2.5 million to $10 million for defense contractors that are entered into after June 30th of 2026. Section 1806 similarly raises the thresholds that trigger contractor compliance with CAS, and it requires implementing regulations within 180 days that increase the threshold for full CAS coverage from $50 million to $100 million and increases the threshold for CAS applicability for a contract from $2.5 million to $35 million. Now, along the same vein, several NDAA provisions lower the barrier to market entry and the compliance burden for non-traditional defense contractors. Under Section 824, the DoD must issue guidance that allows past performance references from commercial contracts and uses, and I quote, alternative methods of evaluation other than past performance when a requirement has little to no precedent. Section 1826 also stipulates that non-traditional defense contractors are exempt from specific statutory and DFARS requirements related to certified cost or pricing data, FAR Part 31 cost principles, and certain business systems. Though DoD can waive that exemption in whole or in part, it can only do so with both a determination by the head of the contracting activity and congressional notice, which ultimately suggests that waivers will likely be rare. Peter?
So on that last point that Yuan made around non-traditional defense contractors, I do think there's a lot we're going to be watching there on what it would mean for non-traditional defense contractors to be exempt from FAR Part 31, certainly something that we'll be watching, and obviously there will likely be more detail forthcoming from the Pentagon. Now we turn to bid protests. Section 875 requires the Secretary of Defense to revise the DFARS to establish procedures for contracting officers to withhold up to 5% of the amount earned by an incumbent contractor as a result of a stay prohibiting award of the contract during pendency of a GAO protest, and for the incumbent contractor to forfeit these amounts if GAO dismisses the protest, and here's the standard, based on a lack of any reasonable legal or factual basis, close quote. There's also a number of other changes affecting multi-year procurements In particular, the Pentagon had called on Congress to enable these multi-year procurement authorities for special situations. And indeed, Section 804 of the NDAA authorizes multi-year procurements for certain munitions, and Congress may continue to enable additional procurements for other areas outside of munitions. The goal, of course, is to create a more stable and steady government demand signal necessary for the industrial base to make capital investments, attract and retain workers, and exercise more control over margins in the long run. How Congress really implements this through appropriations certainly will be interesting and of great interest to contractors. There is also a change to undefinitized contract actions, or UCAs. Section 814 amends 10 U.S.C. Section 3374A to add two new categories of increased cost risk that must be included in the government's calculations when determining profit on undefinitized contract actions. Category one are costs incurred prior to the award of a UCA, when such costs would have been directly chargeable to the contract if incurred after award. And category two, costs arising from negotiations that last more than 180 days from the contractor's submission of a qualifying proposal to definitize the UCA. The Pentagon has to amend the DFARS in order to incorporate these changes. The 2026 NDAA also includes various terms addressing the U.S. government's investment in domestic industry by both reauthorizing a cornerstone of government investment, that's the Defense Production Act, and it's authorized through September 30th of 2026. And there are also a handful of new or expanded authorities that Congress has given to the Pentagon to support certain other sectors with defense industrial base growth. Most significantly, Section 867 amends the Industrial Base Fund to identify specific defense supply chain applications for these authorities. The provision also authorizes the Pentagon to use certain types of arrangements for the industrial base, including contracts, grants, OTAs, incentives, third-party awards for investment, and subsidies to address market manipulation. There are also a couple of sections that relate to defense consortium or collaborative forums. Section 844 requires the creation of these entities to address defense industrial base challenges and limitations, and Section 1845 requires that members of these fora are sponsored for security clearance. Finally, there are a lot of changes to the Defense Finance Corporation. There's a whole section focused on DFC modernization and reauthorization, and it makes significant updates to the authorities allowing for this type of economic investment, primarily outside of the U.S. There are also many, many changes related to commercial contracting, and Yuan's going to talk about those.
Thanks so much, Peter. The NDAA also directs the department to increase its use of commercial contracting and to streamline requirements for commercial contractors and subcontractors. Now, these efforts include requiring the development of a list of defense unique clauses that are based on statutes, EOs, and acquisition policies that are applicable to defense contracts for commercial products and services and COTS items, as well as prohibiting the department from designating clauses that are not on that list as mandatory flowdowns for commercial subcontracts. Congress is also taking further steps towards making commercial designations mandatory and making it more difficult to determine the non-availability of commercial products or services. For example, Section 1822 requires the establishment of processes for determining that commercial products or services are not available, including through market research, and actually requires that such market research include senior DoD personnel. Section 1823 broadens DoD authority to award sole source follow-on production contracts if the original contract was awarded through, and I quote, a competitive selection of proposals resulting from a general solicitation and a peer review, technical review, or operational review as appropriate. This authority now covers all commercial products, services, and non-developmental items, not just those that are innovative, though DoD must still follow justification requirements. We also want to highlight Section 1828, which requires the DoD to conduct a comprehensive review of its approach to commercial products and services procurements, and within 180 days, report to Congress on its findings and where it will take actions to improve. While the final compromise in DAA did not include significant right to repair provisions that both the House and Senate had initially included, the NDAA does require the department to inventory its existing data rights and data rights contractual requirements, including requirements that the department may not always invoke. In particular, Section 805 requires two things. First, for the department to establish a digital system for tracking, managing, and assessing covered data related to covered systems, which is defined as major defense acquisition programs and projects using rapid prototyping or rapid field acquisition pathways that meet certain dollar threshold. And second, to verify contractor and subcontractor compliance with technical data requirements for those covered systems. It also requires DoD to review requirements in contracts for each covered system, including requirements for data deliverables and data otherwise accessible by DoD on a non-deliverable basis. Finally, we want to note that Congress further instructed DoD to review requirements related to covered data and describe the location of that data in the possession of the department or the methods by which the department accesses that data, to evaluate whether that data complies with marking and rights requirements and the requirements of 10 U.S.C. Chapter 275, and to describe the rights in technical data that's generated and granted to DoD in data deliverables. Now, these findings will all be recorded in that digital system I mentioned. With all this information, DoD is going to have to identify areas where covered data are insufficient in a way that negatively impacts effective operation and maintenance of a covered system in a cost-effective manner. If delivery of or access to covered data was required under the contract, but deliveries or access are insufficient or data rights markings are incorrect, then DoD needs to address that issue with the contractor. For covered data where delivery or access was not required, DoD is then directed to request options from the contractor to address the insufficiency of the covered data. DoD is also instructed to consider using escrow agreements and similar arrangements under a specifically negotiated license for required covered data for covered systems. So again, another huge emphasis in the NDAA on data rights and IP allocation rights. Peter, back to you.
A couple other areas we're just going to mention briefly. First is critical minerals. Through the NDAA, Congress restricted DOW's ability to procure critical minerals from non-allied foreign nations, most notably China, while also appearing to concede that the Pentagon simply needs more information about the supply chain in order to make informed decisions on a macro basis. Number two, the NDAA has quite a bit on outbound investment. These are done through amendments to the Defense Production Act, creating notification obligations for certain investments, particularly in China or China-controlled entities, focusing on technologies that include integrated circuits, artificial intelligence, semiconductors, quantum computing. This will be effectuated through regulations. Number three, the Biosecure Act. This had been pending as a separate piece of legislation, but ultimately was rolled into the NDAA. Basically, Congress used the NDAA as a vehicle to enact the Biosecure Act, which is a government-wide ban on contracts with and financial assistance for biotech companies of concern. Essentially, OMB is going to be issuing a list of companies that meet this definition, but it will likely include, at the very least, any entity that is listed on the so-called 1260H list. Number four is drones. In the wake of rising national security threats posed by drone usage, Congress enacted a number of provisions designed to improve, expand counter-drone authorities, along with coordination and use of existing drone authorities, sourcing restrictions, things like that. And finally, cyber and AI. There are a number of provisions in the NDAA about cyber and AI. And really, it focuses on streamlining the evolving threats and a desire, this is in section 866, to harmonize cyber requirements across the defense industrial base, reduce bespoke cyber requirements, identify duplicative requirements, and try to centralize approvals of any sub-regulatory cybersecurity requirements. So we think this is a lot of activity, obviously, and it's going to be driving a lot of things in 2026. Lots to watch. We have more details on our website. And of course, you can feel free to reach out to either one of us. With that, we will wrap up for this edition.
Thanks for listening to The Voice of Contract Management, brought to you by Kroll & Mooring exclusively for NCMA. Stay tuned for our next episode as we continue to discuss all things government contracting. In the meantime, explore your learning opportunities at www.ncmahq.org/coursecatalog.